This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. This is the podcast that's designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of June 15th, 2026. This past weekend marked the 60th anniversary of a landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision in a case that originated with the Phoenix Police Department. Ernesto Miranda confessed to kidnapping and sexual assault, but justices ruled that detectives should have told him certain information first. Matthew Casey reports.
Over the decades, Miranda warnings have been lines in TV shows such as Law & Order, Dexter, and Breaking Bad.
You have the right to remain silent and refuse to answer questions. Do you understand?
Anything you say or do can be used against you in a court of law.
You have the right to speak to an attorney and have an attorney present during any questioning. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you at the government's expense.
The case from which those words came was assigned to the late Carol Cooley. He'd only been a Phoenix police detective for a short time in 1963, but tracked a suspect down in Mesa with only a partial license plate to go on. Here's Cooley talking about the case with KJZZ in 2016.
And we were suspicious. His criminal record indicated that he had a problem with the police in a number of areas. That's not enough to arrest a guy for.
The guy was Ernesto Miranda. Cooley convinced his suspect to ride downtown and talk about a police matter Cooley preferred to not discuss in front of Miranda's wife and children.
He voluntarily came to the police department. He was not under arrest. He was in handcuffs.
At Phoenix Police Headquarters, which was in what's now known as the Old Courthouse, victims identified Miranda, but not positively at first.
So we went back in and talked to him after the lineup. At that point, he asked us, "How did I do?" And I said, "You didn't do so good, Ernie." He says, "Well, I guess I better tell you about it." And I said, "Yeah, I think you should." So he told us about it and wrote the confession.
That confession was thrown out in 1966 by the Supreme Court, which ruled that police have to inform people of their Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights when they're in custody. Cooley said Miranda wasn't being held, and he was told on the ride downtown that he didn't have to talk.
We were nothing but good guys. We had nothing on him. We had a car seen a week later. That doesn't amount to probable cause.
Miranda was reconvicted. Cooley died in 2023, about a year before the U.S. Justice Department released a civil rights investigation of Phoenix police. Among the findings in the report since clawed back by the Trump administration was that officers routinely violated Miranda rules.
The justice system works when you have judges, defense attorneys, police, and prosecutors all being ethical and doing the right thing.
Phoenix attorney Benjamin Taylor says one of the first things he checks is if his clients were told their Miranda rights.
If the police don't give the Miranda rights to a person who's being questioned and being held in their custody, the case could be dismissed or evidence could be suppressed.
In its report, the Justice Department said investigators looked at multiple incidents in which Phoenix police questioned children without telling them their rights.
Ultimately, you have to give Miranda warnings and you have to let the child know that they have a right to even speak to their parent, too.
The Miranda decision changed policing in the U.S. More locally, the Justice Department findings drew a wave of police reform ordered by the Phoenix City Council. Most jobs have been completed and some are ongoing. One still in the works is a youth interaction policy expected to go live this fall. Assistant Chief Jeff Benza recently told the council.
The policy is to focus on the development of our youth and to teach our employees to deal with youth appropriately and speak with them appropriately.
Benza also said that starting later this year, police report data is going to be monitored by a performance compliance team that will be looking for signs of unconstitutional policing. At the same meeting, Chief Matt Giordano told the council he's working on a 3-year strategy for the department starting in 2027.
This plan will integrate lessons learned from the U.S. Department of Justice investigation, ensuring that the department's future direction is informed by a clear understanding of past issues and a commitment to meaningful and lasting improvement.
Summarized in the plan will be years of reforms before the Justice Department came to town. 2 years after its report and 60 years after Miranda, Phoenix police keep evolving. Matthew Casey, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In Fronteras News, swaths of green punctuate the desert off the highway leading through Mexico toward Nogales, Arizona. Fresh produce, worth billions of dollars a year, is constantly on the move across the Arizona-Mexico border. Now, negotiators are discussing the future of the free trade deal that keeps it all tariff-free. From the Fronteras desk in Hermosillo, Nina Kravinsky has more.
It's shady under a canopy of vines at the Pozo Manuel Table Grape Vineyard north of Hermosillo. Jose Manuel Chavez, who leads a group of field workers harvesting these fruits, shows me how he perfects a freshly picked bunch of pale green grapes.
Uvas que están un poquito dañadas por el calor.
He snips off any grapes that have sun damage. As temperatures slide toward 100 degrees, workers sweat even under the shade of the grapevines overhead. There are rows and rows of vines like this on this 1,400-acre vineyard. It's one of Sonora's largest in a state where table grape production is big business. During the harvest season, Pozo Manuel can pack up to 60,000 boxes of grapes a day, the vast majority destined for the U.S.
We send grapes to Costco and Target and Walmart and Sam's and Whole Foods.
Alejandro Villaseñor oversees production and says the grapes dangling on the vine above us will most likely be across the border in Arizona by tomorrow. From there, they'll be shipped to different parts of the U.S.
We are harvesting in a period of time of the year where there's nobody harvesting but us.
Sliding into a U.S. market hungry for grapes in the weeks before California starts producing has allowed this operation to grow. At the peak of the season, more than 1,000 migrant workers from further south in Mexico live here to tend to the fields. Last year, more than $275 million worth of fresh grapes passed from Mexico into Arizona, tariff-free thanks to the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal that the first Trump administration negotiated to replace NAFTA. Now, USMCA is up for its first mandated review, 6 years after going into effect.
I don't know that I'm going to renew it because, to be honest with you, the United States does much better. Hey, we don't need anything that Canada has. We don't need anything that Mexico has, but they need everything that we have.
That was President Trump last week, ahead of a July 1st deadline for the countries to decide whether they'll stay in the trade pact, make changes, or withdraw completely. 3 decades of free trade between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada have shaped how Americans eat, says agricultural economist Daniel Sumner.
Canned fruits in the United States, which have gone way downhill, whether it's peaches or pears or you name it, because people have access to fresh berries and other fresh fruits year-round, grapes year-round.
The USMCA is now likely to go into months, if not years, of negotiation. Farmers are used to dealing with a certain level of uncertainty, like weather and consumer demands.
The political uncertainty is harder. And right now we're dealing with a set of politicians that are seemingly unpredictable or maybe even creating uncertainty on purpose.
These negotiations are happening at a tense time for the U.S. and Mexico politically. The U.S. recently indicted several Mexican officials accused of aiding drug cartels, and Trump has made cracking down on criminal groups in Mexico a political goal.
Mexico and Canada have to consider that every single thing that comes out of the administration mouth right now is extremely important and they should take very, very seriously.
Jaime Chamberlain is a produce distributor in Nogales, Arizona, who buys produce from Mexico to distribute in the U.S. While trade negotiations could be a way to get more than just a good price on table grapes, Chamberlain says ultimately the U.S. and Mexico still need each other.
We cannot feed our own domestic population. We need each other to feed each other.
Back at Pozo Manuel, Villaseñor agrees that the U.S. and Mexico are too intertwined to fully extract from one another. But tariffs would likely mean higher prices.
The ones that are going to suffer that will be the consumers, sorryly.
For now, he says his focus is on taking care of these plants.
We have a good product here, and there's not going to be a big problem if we are doing our best.
Nearby, a worker nabs a sweet green grape and pops it into his mouth. Chances are by nightfall, the rest of the bunch will be at the border. Nina Krivinsky, KJZZ News, Hermosillo.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening.
Rio Salado College, in partnership with ASU and Penn State University, is offering a free 12-week semiconductor manufacturing training. The next session begins August 24th. More information at riosalado.edu/veterantraining.
In tribal natural resources, an Arizona tribe along the southern border has filed a lawsuit in federal court against the Department of Homeland Security. Gabriel Pietrazio has details.
The Fauna Offam Nation has submitted an injunction to halt the Trump administration from looking to build a wall along its 62-mile boundary with Mexico. According to the complaint, the administration plans to solicit contracts for construction on sovereign lands without the tribe's consent.
We would prefer not to file this lawsuit and instead use these resources for our people.
That's Fauna Offam Chairman Verlin Jose in a social media message.
And it is our hope DHS will reconsider their plans once they see the strength of our arguments. However, at this point, we have been left with no other choice.
Gabriel Pietrazio, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In water news. Looking to shore up its water supply as Colorado River cuts loom, Cave Creek is finalizing a water agreement with Peoria. Cameron Sanchez reports.
Cave Creek gets nearly all of its water from the Colorado River through the Central Arizona Project canal system. The town has also paid to store water in a West Valley aquifer the town can't really access. So Cave Creek is letting Peoria use some of its stored water in exchange for Peoria's CAP water. Cave Creek Utilities Director Sean Cruz-Weisner.
It gives us a lot of security for the next few years in order for us to evaluate and find the next long-term sort water resources for the town. You know, having these in place is a huge thing. Again, we've been working on it as staff and our consultant team for over 2 years now to get to this point.
The Peoria City Council has already signed off on the deal, and the Cave Creek Town Council will vote on the agreement next week. Cruz-Weisner says Cave Creek is looking to finalize a similar agreement with Surprise. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In business news, in a unanimous ruling, the Arizona Court of Appeals overturned a controversial fee on Arizona Public Service customers who have solar panels on their homes. Wayne Shutsky reports.
When the Arizona Corporation Commission approved an APS rate hike 2 years ago, it also let the utility charge solar customers an extra fee to cover what it called extra costs to provide backup power to those residents. But a three-judge appeals court panel found that APS never actually asked for the fee as part of its rate increase request. That violated the due process rights of solar advocacy groups and customers opposed to the change, because they weren't even informed the solar fee was on the table or given a fair opportunity to state their case. The judges also found APS never provided evidence that solar customers are responsible for increased costs. Wayne Shutsky, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In health news, Voices of Arizona is a special segment where we spotlight everyday Arizonans who help make our state an extraordinary place to live. In this latest story, Jill Ryan introduces a Phoenix teen who recently broke several national para-swimming records, and her sight is set on the 2028 Paralympics.
Before most babies learned to crawl, Josie Dolan was already getting used to the pool. Her parents signed her up for the Hubbard Swim School as an infant, and from there on to the Scottsdale Aquatic Club. Josie has spent all 15 years of her life so far deepening her love for the water.
In 2024, I didn't really know if I wanted to go to the Paralympics, but I was invited to the Paralympic trials, and that was a really big turning point. So I sort of set a little goal in my mind to get to 2028.
The competitive swimmer practices 7 days a week with private coaching on Sundays.
Focus on technique in 2025. Right now I'm focusing on more endurance and speed. Next year I want to focus a little bit more on technique and my diving especially.
With her disability, it's not physically possible for Josie to jump. As a result, her dives can slow her down at the starting block.
I have spastic hemiplegia cerebral palsy, which means that half of my body is affected and I have the right side of my body, and I have muscle tightness and muscle spasms occur quite often, and it makes my muscles weaker on the right side of my body, so it throws off my balance.
Josie was not always a para swimmer. For For much of her childhood, she and her family did not even know she had a disability. Leanne Dolan, Josie's mom, just knew something was wrong.
Josie's diagnosis was considered pretty late.
She said Josie walked a little later than other toddlers. She would fall down a lot. She would drop things, run only on her tiptoes. And they would bring it up every year at the pediatrician.
And it was pretty much dismissed, like our concerns were dismissed.
They weren't sent to a specialist until Josie was 9, but answers were delayed again. It was 2020, and the COVID pandemic had shut down the world.
When you don't know what's going on and your kid is just falling over and very tipsy and kind of they just drop things with their right hand all the time, that's scary.
Once they learned what was happening, Leanne said it became pretty easy to deal with.
So I was so happy that she had been in the pool the entire time because that's where she belongs. Like she can't hurt herself in the pool. She can just go fast.
But obstacles remained.
She doesn't know where her leg is in space at any time. And so what was happening is she was getting disqualified a lot doing breaststroke because her leg didn't work the way that other legs worked. And so her kick wasn't correct.
Enter one of Josie's coaches, Laurel Hill, with Scottsdale Aquatic Club.
She walks with a brace, but she can't flex her right foot. And you have to have flexion in the breaststroke kick. So it's not an issue for butterfly backstroke or freestyle because your foot is pointed anyway.
Hill met Josie about a year after she was diagnosed. And that's when Josie first heard that maybe she one day could be a Paralympian.
I really feel she's on the path to 2028, and I would be so excited to be cheering her on, probably on TV, because those tickets are wicked expensive.
Hill worked with Josie on specifically her breaststroke for a year and a half, first trying to make the kick correct, then pivoting to show intent, which paraswimming rules allow. Her work has paid off. Josie's broken 3 national paraswimming records this year, all in breaststroke.
And it just moved up to my best stroke. And so, like, if you told me that I would have broke an American record in breaststroke, like, 2 years ago, I would have not believed you.
Now she says it's just about continuing to get better, network, and hopefully find herself competing for gold in the LA 28 Paralympic Games. Jill Ryan, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In education news, the Tucson Unified School District has approved a nearly $800 million budget proposal for the next fiscal year. As Bridget Dowd reports, the district has been trying to agree on where to make cuts as it faces a 2% decrease in enrollment.
The district is projected to have a $25 million budget deficit by 2030 and has been identified as a high financial risk district by the Arizona Auditor General. Earlier this year, the board approved about $7 million in budget reductions. Chief Financial Officer Ricky Hernandez says a $45 million voter-approved override is helping them for now, but
there will need to be some additional cuts that will need to happen because unless the enrollment levels out, right? You know, that is still the number one factor for why we're losing.
The district is also considering closing or consolidating some schools to save more money in the future. Several districts across the state have closed schools due to similar enrollment challenges. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, from KJZZ's The Show. Nearly 3 years after the city of Phoenix cleared out the zone, there's more to the area. Here's co-host Lauren Gilger.
Well, now concerns are rising that the zone is back, or maybe that it never really went anywhere. So I went down there on a recent Friday morning to find out.
I'm walking around down here about 7:30 a.m. and people are getting cleared out. Police officers asking folks to leave.
Some people prepare early in the morning. Some people get up 3, 4 in the morning just to get their stuff together and then start moving about 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning.
That's Devontae Chandler. I met him sitting with his girlfriend and a few other folks along a red, white, and blue painted building on West Madison Street that morning.
People move out at 5 and 6 because they're going to have to.
They have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then, I mean, you get arrested. I ticket, cited, arrested.
Do you know a lot of people down here who have those tickets piling up?
No, they're all in jail.
Chandler and the people with him were certainly not the only people on the streets surrounding the Homeless Services campus in downtown Phoenix that morning. Though, as he said, they were mostly packing up and moving out. Police cars were driving slowly up and down the streets, telling people to move on over their loudspeakers. Cleanup crews were picking up trash and power washing the sidewalks.
So where do you guys go when they clear you out?
Parks, like anywhere.
Or like when they get done, like people will walk to the front and by that time they'll get done and people will go back over there slowly.
Are there encampments set up here most of the time now?
Like
tents and stuff?
Not really. No, you don't see a lot of tents.
You can't have tents up, you can't have tarps. Mm-hmm.
Chandler told me he's been homeless for 4 years, but lately he's been living in the city's new safe outdoor space where you can set up a tent in the shade and keep your things safely.
You like it in there?
I mean, it's better than having to wake up every time to stuff getting stolen, to on the streets. It's better than nothing.
The city just announced it wants to continue operating the so-called SOS for another 4 years. But Chandler told me he can't be with his significant other there, so he spends his days elsewhere.
So would you say the zone is back?
No, the zone getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. That's, I would say that. The zone's getting smaller and smaller, clearer and clearer.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Phoenix is just going to have homeless people everywhere. Once they clear this out, everyone's just stretching back out to further and further. They clear out the parks, we're going to go farther and farther. There's only so much that they can do and so much we can do. You know what I mean? Because there's a list. You have to call 211, get on a list. You go here, get on a list. You go to the heat release, you get on a list. No matter what, people are going to wait. And the people are waiting. Who don't have housing, where are they going to go to wait? What are they going to do waiting? What help are they getting waiting?
Right.
No one's getting any help waiting.
So there's one view from someone on the street in the so-called zone. It's getting smaller, but it's just spreading around the homeless population. So I also took the question to Scott Hall, deputy director of the City of Phoenix's Office of Homeless Solutions. Is the zone back?
Yeah, well, first I'd say, you know, do people understand what that area is?
The zone surrounds the Key Campus, the city's sprawling, centralized homeless services campus, where folks can get 3 meals a day, shelter beds, medical and dental care, case management, and more.
So you're always going to have walk-up traffic or people coming up to receive those services.
According to a June 3rd count from the Keys to Change outreach team, there were 283 people unsheltered on the street outside of the campus that morning. And in the shelter inside, 900 people slept each night. So while Scott Hall doesn't like calling it the zone, he says no, it's not back.
By no means are large encampments back or the 1,000-person encampment back that was there 3 years ago. We're out there 7 days a week doing outreach. My team's out there 5 days a week with them, engaging with people, trying to get people into services, into heat relief, and to accept those services. And PD's out there on a daily basis enforcing any kind of criminal activity.
Hall said they've actually upped the number of days their cleaning crews are out there in the mornings, and they're steadily seeing a decrease in the number of people staying around the campus. But as long as all of the services are right there, they're still coming. Is this something that, you know, has ever stopped in that area since the, you know, the lawsuit happened and the zone was, quote unquote, cleared out?
Yeah, it has not stopped.
Hi, excuse me. Do you live here? Hi, I'm Lauren Gilgram with KJZZ News.
What's your name?
Joel Copeland.
Joel Copeland owns an art gallery right in the middle of the zone. He and his wife live above it. I ran into him as he was going to roll his trash can inside the fence that surrounds his property that morning.
So about 7:30 or so, everyone's about cleared out right now.
Yeah, it was kind of late. I thought that there were, but I think they're just taking it a little. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Copeland was one of the business owners who filed the lawsuit against the city of Phoenix that forced the cleanup of the zone. But he's also driven folks who live there to doctor's appointments and packed up their belongings in the back of his pickup truck to help them move in when they finally get housing.
We've become friends. I know their families. I know their children. I know, you know. We're part of, they're our neighbors.
He's seen it all outside his window here, from deadly fights to deadly overdoses to incredible acts of compassion. And he doesn't really blame the city for the people who are still here since the cleanup.
They're trying as hard as they can. It's just the situation is so desperate.
But, he told me, he still thinks more needs to be done.
they shouldn't be sitting here on the street. There should be adequate shelter for them. There needs to be supervised shelter for them. There needs to be mental health care. There needs to be all kinds of things that they're doing, just not enough.
Just not enough.
The flood is too big, and it needs to be spread out, because everybody can't come down here to one big dinosaur of shelter and help. Right. And it should be several shelters all throughout the metropolitan area that should be triaged and have specific things for people to go to. And nobody should be pooping in a bucket and pouring it down the storm drains.
I'm sure you know that that is a long and ongoing battle in the city and in the valley to get, you know, to spread the wealth a little bit when it comes to homeless services, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, here we sit 6 blocks from the state capitol and 6 blocks from City Hall. And why this happened here, I just can't believe that it was even allowed to become right here in the heart of downtown.
Copeland is a painter, classically trained, and sometimes he asks the folks outside his gallery to sit for him. He listens to their stories. He tells them his.
I try to paint them beautifully. You know, so it's a gritty subject, but it's painted beautifully. So it's kind of, you know, pretty gritty. You know.
Could you show me one? Would that be okay? Thank you. Oh, wow, yeah, this is quite a studio space. There are paintings on the wall in gold frames everywhere, piles of canvases up. This is huge. They look like scenes out of like an old kind of Renaissance painting or something, but they're of these folks right outside here in the zone.
I have studied the methods and materials of the old masters, and I try to put it to a contemporary use.
What's this one? She's got a puppy here? And there's some empty bottles laying on the ground under a palm tree.
It's the shade of one palm. You know, it can be hilarious when there's a palm tree and it gives about 16 inches of shade and everybody's standing in the shade, you know, and we're sitting underneath one palm tree. And here's Sterling. He's from San Carlos. I've taken him up to the reservation several times, met his family. And to me, it's just, you know, it's interesting as it can be to be up there and be accepted by everybody,
yeah.
And to you know, go to the center of town and buy stuff. And it's just it's remarkable for me to have the opportunity to have met Sterling, to be able to go up to San Carlos and become involved with their community.
The San Carlos Apache Reservation's what, like 3.5 hours from here?
Oh, not that far. You know, maybe two.
It's a long drive.
Yeah. That's all right.
So you're willing to, it sounds like, really go out of your way to get to know these people, to help them, to bring them home.
You should just talk to my wife. Yeah, I'm the guy that helps.
Yeah.
And people come all the time. And it can be exhausting. There's only so much of you. And you give a piece away, and then you got to try and rebalance.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you rebalance?
You just keep going. Whatever presents itself to you, you have to deal with in whatever way you can.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you have to say no. Sometimes you just say, I can't deal with that.
Are there moments when people have really broken your heart?
Oh, all the time. It keeps slipping back. You know, they come forward, and then, oop, all of a sudden there's a big slip.
Yeah.
And it's just human nature, you know. It's hard. It's difficult to be us.
You mean people?
Yes. Human beings.
But it sounds like you are kind of positive about it. Like, it sounds like you have not stopped. You haven't quit. You haven't left. You still know all those folks.
I don't know, how do you stop? I don't know. You can't. I mean, I just feel for it.
I mean, I wonder, if you could talk to, you know, the people who drive past, people who are experiencing homelessness on the street and, you know, are holding up a sign and they drive by, or people who are outraged by what's happening at the zone, or the lawmakers and policymakers down the streets both ways, right, at City Hall and the state capitol right here. Like, what do you want them to know about this place?
Well, these people need help, and not just, you know, housing. You know, they need to have specialty care for individuals that need it so bad. And are receiving it, but everything takes so long. And there's so many long lines. You know, even just to do your laundry, you stand in line forever, you know, to see the doctor, to see the dentist, to see anybody. You're just, and it needs to be more efficient, and it needs to be more triaged.
Do you ever think that'll happen?
I'm hoping. There's always hope. As long as there's hope, it can happen.
Thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for all you do.
The city of Phoenix says it is home to about 35% of the region's homeless population and 82% of the region's shelter beds. Since 2022, they've added more than 1,200 shelter beds and 300 spaces at their SOS, the city's outdoor campground. Because of that, the latest point-in-time homeless count showed, while homelessness overall barely changed from last year, unsheltered homelessness dropped 12% valley-wide.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast, made possible in part by the Katina Foundation, Basis Charter Schools, Palo Verde Generating Station, SRP, and the Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust. Thank you for listening and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ. Listen more, learn more, online, and on the KJZZ mobile app.